kirtan. Sometimes there were only three or four or five of us there, but people joined in. And on one occasion, on the lower level, there was some kind of a celebration going on. I remember we had a big kirtan, and there were maybe 100 people there. And it was one of those things where everybody just sort of let it all hang out, so to speak. Started to dance and chant, and it became like a real event. Everyone participated, everyone chanted, and everyone danced, and became sort of lost in the ecstasy of kirtan. It was a very special night. So that was a regular thing, and it came to pass that through Gurudas, who met a boy named Nigel Samuel. I think he's from the Samuel tourist chain, right? Anyway, he owned this building, and he was quite wealthy. So he let us have a building in Betterton Street, which is in Covent Garden. And for about 3 months, that was only maybe a few hundred yards from this art slab in Drury Lane. So we were able to use the whole building. And Prabhupada's letters would come regularly and inspire us to do things. So once we had that place, we decided to call together all the people we knew into one place and make an appeal to have a temple. So we'd written to Prabhupada and asked him to send a tape so that we could play a cassette tape of his speaking and everyone would be able to hear. So we sent out an invitation, a fairly fancy invitation, and it was written with a kind of tongue-in-cheek mode, and it said, guess who's coming to dinner? And there was a big list of people, including some members of Parliament, and the Queen, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the Beatles, and so on. And it said, guess who's coming to dinner? Maybe nobody, but here's who's invited. And then we gave the list. And somehow it captured their imagination, and a lot of people showed up, thinking that some of these other people might be there. It had the letterhead of ISKCON with a picture of Radha and Krishna in a lotus on it. And Jimuna was our cook, and we hired some stainless steel cutlery silverware to serve everything out in. And there were no chairs. It was just a burlap floor, just a big bare room about this size, a little bit bigger maybe. And the tape from Srila Prabhupada had come just a few days before. So when that came, we felt confident that even though we had no qualifications to talk to members of Parliament and some of the VIPs that came, that we would succeed. Do you want to talk about that a little that night? I'll just say what I can remember. Maybe Shamsunar will pick up on this. But we prepared little speeches, and we listened to Prabhupada's talk ahead of time. He chanted Hare Krishna mantra at the beginning of the tape, and then we talked for about 15 minutes. So I remember one member of Parliament who came was Tom Driver. He was a fairly prominent MP at the time. He'd written some books. He was a literateur of sorts, and he was the MP for Barking. Had the big hall named after him out there somewhere, the Tom Driver Hall. And he'd helped us actually get our premises in Berry Place later on. So he came, and with very great difficulty sat cross-legged on this burlap floor, probably in his 60s then. And a few other people of note came. Most of them were sort of dressed semi-formally. And so we gave presentations. I remember you gave something. We had the board when we were tracing the history of ISKCON and how we had grown, where we had temples, what countries we were in, what our philosophy was. So the three of us, Gurudas and Shamsunar, each stood up and tried to, you know, give a little impression of what Krishna consciousness was about. And then we played the tape of Prabhupada. And he had a very deep, resounding voice. And my dear ladies and gentlemen. And started off with a little kirtan. And then he proceeded to explain what he was doing and why he was here. And in this tape, he said that, actually, we can live under a tree. It does not matter. We're in the renounced order of life. But in order for nice ladies and gentlemen like you to have a place to sit down comfortably and hear, we require a proper premises. So when we heard that, we felt very relieved because he was older than most of the people there, and he had a very, very distinguished sounding voice, and kind of aged compared to what we sounded like. So we actually felt very secure. We felt sheltered by Prabhupada, and that whatever he said was really penetrating and making people more respectful. And it actually was the case, because here they were in this bare room, in there, many of them wearing suits and ties, sitting on the floor, listening to a bunch of Americans that they'd never seen before in strange clothes with strange markings on their foreheads. And when Prabhupada spoke, it changed the whole environment. And you could see that people were listening, and the whole mood was a lot more serious. So that was the appeal, that we should have a proper place, a bigger place, a suitable premises. And of course we read a little from Bhagavad Gita and other books and explained our philosophy. And at the end we had the ability of Jamuna, who had cooked all day and some very nice catering, silver catering equipment and eating utensils. So I don't think anybody was dissatisfied, even though it wasn't at all what they'd expected, because the prasadam was excellent, and the way it was served was also very excellent. So I think maybe there was a guy named Miles from the International Times, who was one of our people who connected us with Tom Dreiberg, and a few other semi-notable people who were all kind of surprised to see each other there, in a way, in that kind of a setting. But that was our first attempt. That was maybe in November, I think. We had arrived in September, August and September. And that was sort of a beginning of, in this country, it was seemed to be, to us, more of a matter of knowing the right people and knowing what to do. So we tried to work through a network of people who were friends, who were connected in some kind of a network, and in that way to get a little foothold in the beginning. The old boy system.
In fact, I think what's been famous through all these times was the constant emphasis that we placed on humor. We were so fortunate to be with Prabhupada so much before we came to England, and we. Prabhupada was always in a jolly mood, and this infected us. And we knew that things weren't going right if we weren't laughing about it. Every day we would get together after our separate endeavors for the day and exchange the humorous incidents that had happened to each of us. We had so much fun putting this thing together. That's all I remember, is the amazing amount of laughter and jokes that we were constantly exchanging. And I think that's, you know, Prabhupada was always when he was spreading Krishna consciousness and happiest, he was always joking too. This is one of the symptoms of being Krishna conscious, that you're in a comic mood almost. And someone asked me yesterday, and they said, yeah, I don't pretend to be a preacher or a spiritual master or a guru of any kind, but I remember some of the things Prabhupada said. This person asked me, he said, how do you know, or what is the best thing to remind you that Krishna is the controller? That Krishna is the controller of everything. And I thought for a moment of my own experiences with Prabhupada, and whenever I was strongest feeling that Krishna was the controller was when I had so much to do that I couldn't possibly manage it all. And I think that was part of the key to our success here as well, that Prabhupada heaped this huge responsibility on us, and we always had much more than we could possibly handle. So we knew we weren't doing anything. Krishna was controlling everything. However it turned out, good or bad or indifferent, we had nothing to do with it. It was Krishna gradually doing everything. It took a long time to get a foothold, a very long time. People of England are a bit resistant to something like this, as they were in those times. So humor, I think, and the adventure, I remember, the feeling as a young man that I was having more fun and experiencing more adventure than anything, any other kind of activity I could be doing. I mean, every day was a total risk. We did things that I would never do now. There was no limit. We were fearless because we had each other's strength too, and we had Prabhupada's constant strength. Even he would call up on the telephone sometimes, and we'd all gather around, take turns talking to him in San Francisco or Los Angeles, telling him, and he'd always push. Well, hurry up. What are you guys doing? Come on. And we told him that our mutual feeling was that we should have a center close into the heart of London. Because of the living conditions as householders, we all had to live in various suburbs and quite often far away from each other. You'd be out in Clapham and I'd be in Balham and Gurdas would be up in Golders Green, and, you know, we had trouble communicating even. And so it dawned upon us that if we were going to be effective at all, that we should be in the center of London, right in the heart, and wait and work toward some very nice facility right in the heart of London, as opposed to setting up a storefront somewhere in Golders Green. So this took a long time, and Prabhupada, you know, he encouraged us that way. Yes, he said we should have a place where the gentlemen and gentlewomen of England can come and feel at home and listen to the philosophy. The emphasis was always on philosophy, he told us. And when ultimately we got our place at Berry Place, just near the British Museum, he was just very, very happy about that. We had a place a half a block from Oxford Street, a block from the British Museum. Do you remember the first time when Prabhupada finally arrived and we were bringing him into London? We took him on a little tour around through town. He had never, of course, been to London, but he'd been reading since childhood about London. And the first thing he saw was, he said, Prabhupada, these are the Houses of Parliament. Oh, they're not so big. Many homes in Calcutta are larger. And he saw the River Thames, and he says, this is but a small stream. And the Big Ben. Very small clock. He wasn't impressed. But I remember one of the things that Prabhupada made us work harder is that Prabhupada set us deadlines. You remember those, Mukunda? We had to have everything ready by John Mastami of such and such a year or whatever, and it just, we became overwhelmed with work. Well, you're all devotees, you know what that's like. You have to get everything ready for a certain time and place, but for Prabhupada's arrival, that put it into a real heavy mode, and fortunately we were able to recruit a few young English devotees, most of whom are not here anymore, other places. Sanjay is still here. Early days, Bajari. What is overwhelming about the whole thing for me is I've been gone for 20 more than 20 years from Krishna consciousness, is to see that all of you young people, although only a very small percentage of you ever even saw Prabhupada, have maintained the perfect level of Krishna consciousness that he planted here, and you're all so highly elevated and angelic. It makes me speechless to see how this potency of Prabhupada's movement has carried on so nicely. The temple, everything, it's just beyond what we could have even imagined in those times. Thank you.
one of the things as Shamsundar was saying, had to do was to do very difficult things that we wouldn't ordinarily do. And this idea of establishing a temple in the center of London was so difficult that after a while we sort of became detached from it. You know, when you're trying to do something sometimes and you just think, well, it's up to Krishna now. It actually became like that. We've had piles and piles of particulars of buildings, you know, the details from different estate agents, where they were located, how many square feet, you know, all the details that I say is that. So we had piles and piles, and every time we tried to get a building, we didn't have enough money. They needed it all right away. We didn't have a guarantor. We didn't have enough money in the bank. We weren't an established or registered institution. So it was almost like going nowhere for months and months and months. It almost took a whole year. And it was just the letters that were coming from Prabhupada that were sustaining the effort. Sometimes we'd be walking the streets of central London, writing down the details on the side of a building that would say for let or for sale, and we'd write down the name of the state agent. We'd come back with a list of 10 or 20, and we'd write them or ring them, and then they would send all these things, and when we'd apply, and they just say, sorry, you know, you're a nobody, we can't help you. And they all wanted just cash, you know, just pay for the whole thing and get a bank loan. And we had no ability whatever to do anything like that. So hey, you want to tell about that?
Nowhere, and we had to leave Betterton Street. We'd been given notice. The Black Power people had moved in on the floor above us. What was the guy's name? Michael X. Michael X and his crew, and they were gradually encroaching on our floor. And the owner of the building had given us kind of notice that you guys have to leave here soon. So we didn't know what we were going to do. And one day in the bank, a man ran into Gurdas and said, "Say, you wouldn't happen to know Sam Spearster, would you? I don't know, he's a Hare Krishna." And this guy, turns out he was an old friend of mine from San Francisco who had moved to London and had become an estate agent here. And we were talking with him, and he said that he knew of a building right on just off New Oxford Street. And remember, the ownership was a little hazy. Nobody really knew who owned it, but his firm was taking £35 a week or something, rent off for it, if they could rent it. So we immediately grabbed it, £35 a week. And I believe in later years, didn't it turn out that the ownership went into litigation or something and we didn't have to pay any rent? So, yeah, I don't know whoever... if that was ever settled or not, but at any rate, as soon as we rented the Berry Place, we began, we saw that it was going to be too small to contain many people, and that it was too confining, and we really wanted to make a nice presentation because it was right in the heart of London. We wanted people to step off the street, New Oxford Street, on their way to the British Museum, or we were across the street from the Theosophical Society, and walk in and have a very nice place. So we began a massive program of reconstruction. We tore out the ceiling, and so we had a two-story high temple room. And I had imported some redwood from California, which is a very beautiful wood. And we actually spent months building this place. Around Mukunda, Gurdas, girls getting donations, £5 here, £10 there, to keep the work going to make the place proper, so that when Prabhupada came, he'd be very proud of us. There was in those days also kind of a competition between the God brothers starting various temples around the world. A friendly competition, but our main kind of competitor was Karander in Los Angeles, because he kept proclaiming L.A. is going to be the world capital. London is the world capital of this kind. So we were constantly competing to try to make Prabhupada's place in London better than the place in Los Angeles. So after several months of this intensive construction work, one day in through the door walks Mr. Savage and Mr. Black. They're the building inspectors. Oh, what have we got here? You blokes wouldn't have a permit, would you? No, we don't have any permits. So. Actually, after their inspection, they were pretty nice about it, but Dickinson and Mays, Savage and Black, they were actually pretty nice about the whole thing. After their inspection, they said, well, you know, actually, this is stronger than the code. You built this place better than the code, but you have to have a permit. So they retroactively gave us the permit. I remember another funny incident, too. Remember those big iron steel beams we had to put into that room? They were so large, we had to bring them in with cranes, with big trucks, a crane. Mick Jagger donated the money for it. And we had to take out the whole front of Berry Place, the windows and the bricks and everything, to get these two big beams in a single piece. And it wound up tying traffic up all over London. The whole day. Constantly we would report our updates almost daily, at least weekly. Each of us individually or sometimes in group letters. And boom, right back would come a letter with some more suggestions. Prabhupada actually took the management of the English yatra in hand, far away, and directed it from afar. He was interested in every detail of everything he did. And then he said, I remember, Mr. Linder, you probably do too, he finally said, I think it was on the telephone, I am coming. And he just set a date. We weren't ready, he said. He came. Can you take it from there? Remember what happened?
Yeah, when this benefit was told to be available, it was a very strange situation because we went to him and he said, just move in. And just move in. You know, occupancy is 9/10 of the law. Just move in. So we went to some estate agents that were associated with him. He was a nominal owner. And so, well, you know, at least we get a lease or something. Yeah, you don't need it. No, just move in. Yeah. So just give us the money, you know. I think they wanted like three months rent in advance, which was something near to about 500 pounds. So we insisted, and then we contacted the solicitors of the then Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, and then were Goodman and Derrick, the Goodman, Derrick and Company. And then they had their solicitors, John Jay, Olympic fencer of the British team. Anyway, they made some kind of a deal between these two solicitors where we were going to be there, sort of an unnamed group of people were going to be in there for a period of time. It's a very strange arrangement. Couldn't do the lease. Ultimately, I think the building belonged to it was then the Ministry of Public Works and Building and Public Works. So we just did it. We just moved in, and it was a very low price. Yeah. Right near the British Library. So when we notified Prabhupada, he was very encouraged. Oh, yes, you should take it right away, because we weren't sure, it was a little risky. But we didn't have any money. So I asked Prabhupada, this was either a phone call or a telegram or something, that, you know, we need 500 pounds or we just can't get the place. But they insisted that we have this money. So he said, yes, I will immediately wire the money to you, don't worry. And he sent us the money. That was how we paid for it, money out of his book account or something. And then they wanted a guarantor, didn't they? And I think that's when we asked George Harrison. He wrote a letter on Apple letterhead saying, yeah, I know these people, they're rich, it's okay, no worries. And so they just, you know, it was in, we were in, and that was it. And then Prabhupada then that's when he was saying that he had to come. He gave us a date, and I think he landed in Germany and spent another week or so there in Berlin, and then he flew to London, and that was when he came. And by that time, we were well ensconced in there. We had we were actually staying out at John Lennon's when we came. We also rented an apartment on Baker Street. Yeah, when he came. When he came in, he'd come from Germany, and it had been raining, and it happened at a time when the Radhakrishnan Temple record was very popular. It was selling 70,000 copies a day or something. So they arranged this VIP room where Prabhupada would land, come down a ramp on the airline, walk across the tarmac, and then right into the room through some sliding glass doors. So he didn't have to undergo any formalities with immigration. Just someone came out and wrote down some numbers in his passport, and that was it. So when he came in, I think it was Shyam Sundar and someone else ran out to greet him. And if I remember, it was Hayagriva and Purushottam who were with Prabhupada coming off the plane. And so they ran out and offered their dandavat. And of course, there was a lot of puddles of water out there in the tarmac. I remember you got up and you're all full of jet fuel and water mixed with dirt and pebbles. And there was a British policeman with a checkered hat accompanying Prabhupada. And he made this amazing expression as he watched you get up. Completely just doing his job. Anyway, he ushered Prabhupada into the room. And then there was a great kirtan there in that room. There were vasas, and Prabhupada sat on a little table and led a kirtan. And after the kirtan, everyone was dancing, and many devotees had never seen Prabhupada before. It was just six of us and a few who had come from the States, and most of them were British devotees. And it was a very amazing scene because there were tears in their eyes, and they'd never even laid eyes on Prabhupada before, but it was you could see that there was a great buildup of emotion as he had appeared. And after the kirtan, everyone bowed down. I think you have a picture of that from the sun. I was just looking at it. Yeah, there was a picture of everyone bowing down. It was from the Sun newspaper, the back page. So everyone bowed down, and as they were kind of getting up, there were a group of Fleet Street reporters that started to converge on Prabhupada. And these were the kind of wolves of Fleet Street that Apple Company had invited to see the pop stars. I can probably find it. And so Prabhupada, they all kind of converged, and they were flashing away with their cameras. And they came up to Prabhupada, and they said, "Oh, this is okay. This is right out in the tarmac. I've got to pass this around if it's okay. This is amazing. Funny picture. You can see the policeman. You can see Purushottam and Hayagriva. There's about six devotees, all in their white, bowing down right out in the wet tarmac, and the bottoms of the feet are all black. You can see it. Happiness is Hare Krishna. It's the back page of the Sun. So they all converged on Prabhupada, and very challengingly, one of them said, "Why have you come here?" And Prabhupada said, "I have come to teach you what you have all forgotten, and that is God." They all kind of stopped for a beat. And then after a kind of embarrassing silence, one of them said, then Prabhupada said, before they could say anything, "Some of you think God is dead, and some of you think there is no God, and some of you don't believe in anything." And then they all kind of stopped a little bit, and then Prabhupada talked some more, and then in a very timid way they started asking him things like, "Do you know about Billy Graham? How many countries have you been to? How many devotees do you have? How many temples do you have in this country?" So we were witnessing him really keeping this pack of, well, I shouldn't be so demeaning, but you know how they are. These are the real tough Fleet Street guys, the pack of wolves being kept at bay. That's what it kind of looked like, you know. Intellectually, Prabhupada had really taken charge. So they were taking a lot of pictures, and that was one of them. And then the next morning, someone brought Prabhupada a picture. It was spread across two pages in a tabloid, then called the Daily Sketch. And it had a picture of Prabhupada playing kartals, and it was tilted kind of to one side with his eyes closed. And he looked at the picture and he said, "I was in too much ecstasy." And then he gave the picture to Purushottam, and he said, "Have Jadarani make a painting of this immediately." And then she made this beautiful painting from this photograph. But it said, "Enter Abhicharan Day, Bhakti Vedanta Swami," in big letters right across the page, two pages. And there were some other articles too. It was all part of the Apple publicity campaign for the record, which was kind of peeking out at that moment. And I remember when Prabhupada first got to his room, he asked Shyam Sundari, he said, "So this record, Hare Krishna record, how many is it selling?" And Shyam Sundari said, "Well, Prabhupada, it sold 70,000 copies today." And Prabhupada, "Oh, very big business." It was amazing to ever see him light up like that, or, you know, smile so wide or look so impressed.
Usually after press conferences or arrival deals, later up in his room with his confidential devotees, he'd sit around and say, "Did you hear what I said to that guy? Did you hear what I said to that guy? Wasn't that funny? He was the best. He knew how to put any audience under his thumb. I mean, an aggressive audience or a timid audience, whatever. He could feel the pulse of whoever he was talking to and turn on the charm or turn on the anger, turn on the love, whatever. Whatever it took. And never, hardly ever did I see anyone come into Prabhupada's presence and walk away not touched by it, changed by it, and quite often very radically. But the first 3 months, then we stayed at John Lennon's place, right? Because the temple was under construction still in Berry Place. We really put a lot of work into that place. It took months to build. Prabhupada got very impatient walking around John Lennon's garden every day, not doing anything, not preaching much. We tried to get him some engagements, and there were a few here and there, you know, at Camden Town Hall and that type of thing. But, Oxford Town Hall, that was a great one. But for the most part, he stayed out there in kind of a semi-seclusion while we got the temple ready. Many incidents happened there as well with John Lennon. Not many, but some. They were quite notable. Lennon and Yoko at that time were recluses themselves. No one saw them very often, but our job, we exchanged our labor by being allowed to live there for doing some reconstruction on his house. And I don't know whether I should tell the story of the Yoko. Anyway, it was a rather demonic, depressing time to be staying in that place. And Prabhupada didn't really like it there all that much. The grounds were very beautiful, and the walks and so on were extremely pleasant, but Prabhupada was anxious to get out into the battlefield and start preaching. So he pushed us very hard to finish up the place, and we finally did. I think we made a grand... Did we have a grand opening there at the temple? Did we have some kind of a grand opening?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that? I don't remember. What happened there was Prabhupada gave us a deadline, December 14th, I think it was, 1969. That was the day that everything had to be done, and everyone had to be invited. D would have to be installed. All the construction work would have to be done. And Shyam Sundar and Tirthapad and others were working almost day and night. And I remember going in from Tittenhurst every day on a bus back and forth from London. You know, I was trying to raise enough money to keep them going, and they were all spending more than we had in the bank. So it was quite a struggle. So he gave us that deadline, and it was a photo finish because he wanted a canopy above the deity to be installed. The room was done with a very a maroon-colored, burgundy-colored carpet, very beautiful, and Shyam Sundar had made a roof with curved pieces of redwood that also looked very beautiful and big beams. So the fateful day arrived, and it was the day to install the deities, and Prabhupada bathed them. And then we all went behind this big curtain to prepare for the installation. And the deities were there. And is that the day? The 14th of December? The fateful day. Yeah, that's the day. Without canopy. So we tried to install this canopy. I think you were back. No, you were out. If you'd been up all night. And Tamal Krishnamaraj and something like that. Tamal Krishnamaraj was there, Jamuna was there, and we were back there with Prabhupada, and there were people sitting in the other side of the curtain waiting for the curtains to open and see the deities installed with their canopy over them. So there were four pillars and a kind of square-shaped canopy. It was rectangular at the bottom, and it kind of pitched up to a point. Anyway, we couldn't get it to stay because they had been up for two or three days, and they didn't have some right fastening mechanism or something like that. So it was falling, and we kept trying, and it was falling. At one point, Prabhupada jumped up and held it up, and it was reminded everyone of Krishna holding Govardhan Hill, you know, with his little thing of left hand. So finally, Prabhupada said, we'll open it without the canopy. It doesn't matter. Don't, just take it out. Yeah, they don't want a canopy. Just take it out. So then there's this canopy. It's about this long and about that wide and about that high from the bottom to the top. And I had to somehow get out. And I said, what do you mean take it out? I said, just take it out, outside. And, okay, it was about 120 degrees Fahrenheit in there because we didn't have any ventilation. And it was just, water was just pouring over our heads. So I had somehow to get from behind the curtain through the crowd and out to the front door and put this out on the footpath somehow or other without being too conspicuous. Impossible. So, you know, I made the attempt. I had this canopy and I sort of, you know, got out the side to make it look like it was just part of what was supposed to be happening, and asked everyone to make a little walkway, and somehow got outside where it felt like it was about 0 degrees after being inside there, and placed it against the building inside the railing, ran along the building, and then as quick as I could I got back inside so we could get ready to open it up for the people to see. So that was an amazing event. When Prabhupada finally sat down to speak, everyone saw the deities. The very first thing he was saying was, now we have this place, we're very thankful, and we want all of you to know that it's too small. We must get a bigger place as soon as possible. And from that moment on, the quest to get a bigger premises, especially Bhaktivedanta Manor, was underway. And it Prabhupada was never one to let anyone rest on their laurels. But from that day on, we were in too small of a place, and we had to get a bigger place for the devotees to live. So that was part of the course for Prabhupada. Never let us rest for a moment. Gave us this deadline. We got it open somehow or other. And then it wasn't big enough. We had to find another place. At that time, one of the reasons Prabhupada liked to stay in London so much or in England was that we constantly brought intelligent prominent guests to discuss with him, have conversations with him, which were very enlivening to Prabhupada. And George Harrison would come from time to time. And one morning, Prabhupada, I went into Prabhupada's room and I said, I had to go to a dinner with George that night at a fellow named David Wynn's house, who was a famous sculptor at that time. He designed the New English Money and the bust of the Queen and all that. And Prabhupada says, oh, okay. He says, I want you to ask him to publish the Krishna book. And for that, we need $10,000, I think it was, or 10,000 pounds. And the basis of our relationship with George up to that time had always been never asking for anything, because everybody in the world is trying to ask George Harrison. Every religious sect of every type is trying to ask him for something. So he immediately turns off when anybody asks him for anything. So our secret of success, I guess you would say, up to that time, is that we never asked George for anything. We waited. We waited, sometimes strategically, until he offered it. But I was under the gun that night. Prabhupada said, yes, tonight you will ask him to print the Krishna book. So I was really on pins and needles all night during this dinner, waiting till the right moment to ask George to do this, because I thought by doing so I would certainly turn him off and maybe we'd never see him again. But finally, at one point in the dinner, I says, George, Prabhupada has requested me to ask you if you will print the Krishna book. So many copies, I've forgotten how many it was. But it will cost 10,000 pounds. And George says, how much? 10,000 pounds. And George started to go, I could just see that look. And suddenly, the house, or the adjacent house, or that house, was struck by a bolt of lightning. This is a true story. And all the lights went out. For about 5 minutes, there wasn't a sound at the table. And the lights came back on, and George looked at me and says, well, after that, I guess there's nothing else I can do. So I was able to report good news in the morning to Prabhupada. No, he waited up. Prabhupada waited up. He waited up. It was 1 o'clock in the morning or so before I got back. Yes, George will do it. Oh, he was so happy. Prabhupada always rewarded the efforts of his devotees. If his devotees, if he saw the sincere efforts of his devotees, he would always reward them. I couldn't believe it. That one day we got back from morning walk about 3-4 days after we opened Berry Place, and the usual walk around Russell Square, and he tapped on the side of the building in front. He said, you shall erect a plaque here, and it shall say, this temple has been constructed by Shyamasundar Das Adhikari. He walked in. Imagine.
So you can walk this around and you can see what the temple looked like. These were the ribs sawn by redwood. They were an arch all the way, you know, up to the building, like a vault or a old Gothic church. And the wooden beams that run along the side were about maybe, 40 feet long? And they had to go through the front of the building, right out into the middle of the street, and on cranes through windows.
So yeah, Prabhupada asked us to erect this plaque. I think he said it should say, this temple was built by the hard labor of effort by Shyamasundar Das Adhikari. He put some kind of a plaque up. It wasn't a very appropriate plaque. It should have been done in bronze. It was sort of painted on. But, where is it now? Chaps Bay Avenue and Endell Street.
walked through that place, Prabhupada liked it very much, but when he heard the price, he said, it is beyond our dreams. We couldn't do it because they wanted cash.
After a while, we got into it too. We had to work less, and we made more on guys like Don and Jaya.
Made them work harder. The other thing we always try to do is make Don and Jaya laugh. It was hard to get a smile at him. He's getting jollier in his old age. His mother said that his hair was rusty. That's why it's red. When letters would come from Prabhupada, they would cause sometimes a complete shift in our direction. I remember when we first started preaching, the only people we knew were relatives and friends of this family who rented the house to us. So almost exclusively we were going to different homes of members of the Indian community. So.